It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WABE. Good to have you with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. It's Friday, political breakfast time, much to digest. Brian Robinson is back with us, former Deputy Chief of Staff and Communications Director to Georgia Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist, and he is former National Southern Regional Director for the Obama 2012 campaign. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Good morning, Dennis.
Good to be back.
Okay, let's start with yesterday's document dump in the Atlanta City Hall bribery scandal. Mayor Reed held a news conference. He said he was angry this happened, and he promised transparency, but he's also taken some heat for releasing only a single hard copy of each of the million-plus pages instead of getting them out electronically. Question now, though, is what next? And Theron, I'll start with you.
No one really knows, because what you saw yesterday was a transparent move by the mayor to honor his promise of releasing these documents. Now, what's so just very confusing about next steps is that once folks are done reviewing these documents, we don't know what's going to come out. So I think what's very important is for all sides involved to continue to try to be as transparent as possible. And let's just wait and see what happens.
And that's a very difficult thing to do in a highly charged political environment, Brian.
It looks like Mayor Reed is trying to go a much more traditional route in crisis communications than what he normally does, which kind of shows you that he knows the severity and the seriousness of these allegations.
What we already know
we
is
know that they
serious.
Happen. Yeah, so they're more than allegations, even though no one's been convicted at this juncture.
Normally, we do have a guilty plea, though.
Exactly. So you do have somebody on the record saying that this happened and saying that they were involved in it. Normally, Mayor Reed is very combative when faced with negative charges, and here he is trying to get ahead of it by at least putting on a show of transparency. And I don't mean that disparagingly. I'm not implying that it's not a genuine show of transparency.
Well, in some sense, he's restrained because the feds are going to want to make sure that he doesn't release too much that could compromise their investigation, that could open him up to some legal trouble.
And I'm sure that that's going to be part of his argument for why they've gone the route that they have, that they're constrained by outside law enforcement to some degree. I still think that this is going to be a problem for the mayor's final year in office. It will hamstring his ability to get things done because there's going to be so much staff resources and staff time and the mayor's attention focused to this. You know, there's this fire raging, and the fire is a really stinky fire, and Kasim Reed wants to get as far away from it as possible.
And Theron, with a mayor's race shaping up to succeed Kasim Reed, you're going to find candidates, I'm sure, raising money on this and using it in their speeches or some of their pitches to voters.
Well, we're seeing that already, Dennis. I mean, you had a Buckhead coalition form where certain candidates sort of mentioned.
Vincent Fort raised it. I was one of the moderators of that.
And also at a time where you just saw folks finishing raising money. But I think that if anyone chooses to do that, they got to be very careful because let's not miss something here. This is a very popular mayor. This is a mayor who has done a lot of good things for the city. You know, Brian and others have come on this show and complimented the mayor for a lot of things that he's done around increasing transit in this city, to creating jobs, to making sure that we're bringing companies here to the city of Atlanta, and they're actually not working here. They're living here. So, yes, people are definitely going to try to take an outsider sort of standpoint to this race. But I think that ultimately the mayor's got to get back to basics. He's got to protect his legacy, and he's got to get through this troubling time right now.
But there will be speculation that, oh, where did the money go? Because this release didn't tell us that.
I think one of the things that it's so unfortunate for anyone who is serving the public, you know, public service, is you really can't always mandate or sort of dictate or control what people who are affiliated with you do in their spare time. And so this is something that I think is just very unfortunate for the city, and I just hope that folks will come together to try to move forward.
The bad news for Mayor Reed is that oftentimes the first wave of revelations in such a scandal is the tip of the iceberg, just the part that dips above the waterline that we can see. Because those are the plea deals. And what always happens is we find out there's a lot more of a story to be told. This may be even worse than what we think now. And right now, we think it's really bad, historically bad for Georgia politics.
But one of the things I got to say is this. None of us really know what happened None of us really knows what's in those 1.3 million documents and 500,000 phone records. So I just think that we need to just basically, you know, wait and see and not get into making these bold predictions until we actually let the investigation be completed. And then once the facts come out and people are arrested or people are come out and cooperated more, then we can then to pass judgment. But I think right now we just got to be fair.
Well, the thing is that they're handing over one page of evidence for every dollar in ill-gotten gains that were received by city employees.
From that subject to Atlanta's biggest economic generator, Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. The reason I'm bringing it up is that the chiefs of the big airlines met yesterday with President Trump. Among their concerns, the travel ban. Brian, is there concern at the state level at this point that it might affect Hartsfield-Jackson to any degree that might hurt the state or the city?
This immigration issue, as Governor Deal has said many times, is a federal issue. And it can only be fixed on the federal level by federal officials.
But it could have effects here.
It could have a ripple effect, but it's not going to be the responsibility of the city of Atlanta or of the state of Georgia. I think that there's some legitimate concern amongst airline officials and perhaps law enforcement that are at airports because there was so much confusion in the early rollout of the immigration policy on the refugees. One thing the White House has vowed to legislators and to the public is that we're going to do better. We're going to do a better job of communicating. We're going to do a better job of being inclusive and bringing people in on these decisions so that no one is surprised and there's not this confusion like we saw last week. They need to keep their word on that because they will really eat away at their credibility if they have another rollout of a major policy that people aren't ready for.
Because what we are hearing in some reports is that even though the ban itself affects a relatively small number of travelers, those who are concerned about how it could affect them, rightly or wrongly, that number is much bigger, and that travel agencies and planners of travel are already seeing that.
That's right. Anytime you have a major change, you're going to have disruptions. And Donald Trump actually takes a lot of pleasure in being a disruptor because you've got to do that in order to really enact the change that people are demanding. Look, he's a guy who's not afraid to break eggs. The thing about breaking eggs is they splatter and it causes problems. So we have to do something on the splatter control.
Because it is a federal issue, is there anything the state or city can do at Hartsfield-Jackson about it? Or are they pretty much stuck in a, okay, let's wait and see what the fallout is kind of position?
I believe that they're in a wait and see what the fallout is position because this is solely a federal responsibility. It is inappropriate and dangerous for a state or city to get involved in these. The hammer can come down on them from the feds fairly easily, whether it be the federal judiciary or the White House. So staying on the sidelines and letting them figure it out, letting them make the decisions, and letting them face the consequences, good or bad, for those decisions is the best way forward for the state and city.
On the subject of the travel ban, White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer included Atlanta among a list of cities that he was reeling off that had seen terror attacks from Middle Eastern terrorists. The problem was, of course, that didn't happen. Now, Atlanta has seen a terror attack that, of course, was known around the world, the Olympic Park bombing. But it was not the kind of terrorists that they are trying to stop with this travel ban. He not only said it once, he said it three times. And then yesterday said he was clearly referring to Orlando and just got mixed up. But Theron, as far as city officials go, when they hear that, do they get concerned that people might think it actually did happen here from terrorists from the countries that are the subject of the ban?
Absolutely. I mean, when Atlanta has the, you know, world's busiest airport that's ran by the city of Atlanta, when you have all the things that Donald Trump said about the 5th District and attacking Congressman John Lewis and implying that we're just this terrible district with all this crime and all these bad people. Yes, but I think that what was really just unfortunate is that it just really shows that this is truly amateur hour in the Trump administration. I mean, you know, you got a press secretary whose job is to be able to communicate to the American people with facts and to not say it once, but twice, but three times, and then come back and say he meant Orlando, I think was a big mistake on their part.
And Brian, at the state level, you've been in that job.
I would say that there was a massacre in Atlanta, but it happened in Houston on Sunday. So
different subject for a different day.
Yeah. there's a lot of pressure on this guy, a tremendous amount of pressure. He has got bullets flying at him, and he not only has bullets flying at him from the front, he has them flying at him from the back. There has just been an ocean of stories out this week about Trump being unhappy with him, the backbiting against him within the White House. Look, Sean Spicer is being asked to do the impossible over and over and over again. I feel for him. I don't know how in the world you go out there and defend some of the stuff that he says in a way that's going to make the president happy. I don't know what he would have to do. It's a really, really hard job. There are reports out today that two people have declined the communications director job in the White House, which Theron would agree is one of the probably the prime communications job in the entire country normally. And people are being like, no, I mean, there's just no way you can do the job. You can't drive a consistent message or plan when you don't know what the boss is going to tweet at 3 a.m.
Well, that's one of the points I want to jump in here, Brian. And you know, you really developed a reputation for yourself as being a guy who would come up with a very, you know, sort of smart, but kind of quirky, but, you know, sort of attack, not necessarily calling someone out type of quotes in the papers. And what you were able to do is that you always presented yourself as a person who, well, the governor maybe wanted you to say one thing, you knew how to get the governor's message across without offending the press. And I think that's been the biggest thing. I mean, when you come out at the beginning of your first press briefing and you start attacking the press, and then you expect for them not to really hone in and really question everything you say from that point on. I just think that while Spicer is under a tough position right now as far as being President Donald Trump's press secretary, I do think that he can add a little bit of finesse to how he communicates the president's message and can really be a little bit more humbled in how he in this job. I think that's been the biggest problem.
I get what you're saying. I don't think that President Trump, who is the boss, who is the decision maker, wants someone who is humble or who has more nuance. You know, this is someone who uses a pretty flat head hammer in his messaging at the very top, and he wants someone who can go out there and fight like a kamikaze pilot to back him up and to fight for his policies. He doesn't want what Theron is suggesting, even though what Theron is suggesting is very traditional and very normal.
But wouldn't he be a lot more effective as that head of the hammer if he had his facts straight?
That's exactly what it is. Listen, Brian, you know, you can be a guy who attacks and sort of like you just described, you know, someone who's going to come out hard and really push back on the media, or you can have someone who I think is best with a little bit more finesse. But the common thread between those two approaches is that what's non-negotiable is to not have your facts together. If you go out here, you're in that role, you've got to be brief. Even when we come on the show, we've got to have our facts together, right? And so I think that's been the biggest disappointment, and this is one of the reasons why you see all the pushback against him.
Well, what do you do, though, when what you think to be true and what your coworkers think to be true is different than what the president has said? And I think that that is the underlying problem. When Sean is asked, where's the evidence that 3 to 5 million people voted illegally? He can't get his facts straight. There's no facts he can point to. Yeah. What does he do? It's impossible. It is the hardest job that I have ever witnessed. And as a former communications director for an executive, granted, not president, but governor of the 8th largest state, I ask myself all the time, what would I do if I was getting these questions? And I pride myself on being able to wiggle out through to the right message. And I never figure out the pathway out of that maze, ever.
Yeah, but the big problem here is that, and this is something that I've said on the show before, and this is one of the things that Donald Trump was criticized while he was a candidate. He has no governing experience. You and I have both been on campaigns. You've been on a campaign before. I've run a campaign for members of Congress. I've worked on a presidential campaign. I've run a campaign for a mayor. Once you are elected, you then have to go into governing mode. Now, what does that mean? That means there's got to be full collaboration on the staff. Let's face it, Brian, you would never go out there and say something that had not been approved by the governor and Riley hadn't at least signed off on without them knowing about it. I would never go out and say something on behalf of the mayor or anyone, the congressman, without it sort of being a collaborative approach where the staff has gained a central view. So I think this is just a big excuse for Spicer. It is his fault as press secretary that he should make sure that he has all his facts together and make sure that everyone in a governing mode has come up with all the details so he can go out and communicate to the American people.
We've got just a little time for a couple of quick thoughts now. Overnight, the U.S. Senate confirmed Metro Atlanta Congressman Tom Price as the next Secretary of Health and Human Services. That brings up another big what next question, the future of the effort to repeal and replace Obamacare. Now, there's a rush among Republicans to do that, but as time goes on, more and more of them keep floating their own replacement ideas, and they can't get together on them.
Well, we always knew that was going to be the issue, that the replace was going to be the crux of it. And the fact is, you haven't seen them enact the repeal just yet. Obamacare is still alive and well for right now. Once we have Secretary Price in place, I do hope that he can be the person who spearheads this debate and works with Speaker Ryan and Senator McConnell to come up with a consensus Republican plan. It was really hard for Democrats to get the votes they needed to get Obamacare in place in the first place. It's going to be just as hard for us to come to consensus on the Republican side. But Tom Price has given serious thought to these issues for many, many years. He has plans that will work, that are feasible. And so he's got the right foundation planted for this. Now, what I hope is, in the meantime, President Trump said to Bill O'Reilly over the weekend that it may be a year before we have the replace enacted. And so that's a longer time span than what we had planned on.
Will the GOP base put up with that, though? They wanted something immediate.
Well, you know,
President Trump promised something immediate.
I mean, that's part of the problem. It's kind of keeping up with those promises. Right. But one thing that I hope that Secretary Price, being from a state that has not expanded Medicaid and is getting crunched by the current Obamacare because of it, I hope that Secretary Price will come up with a stopgap measure in the meantime to aid the states that have not expanded Medicaid.
Because Georgia does not, with its rural hospitals, and we've mentioned this before,
we don't have 2 years.
Does not have a year to wait, years to wait.
Yeah, we don't have a year. We don't have 2 years. Certainly. So I hope that Secretary Price can step in as a Georgian who gets the problems on the ground and come up with a Band-Aid.
See, the problem with this whole thing is that you can't get the synergy you need within Congress amongst the Republican leadership to really even agree on a repeal. And then you now have conversations about replace. When I start seeing Republican members of the House come out and sort of contradict what President Trump is trying to do, that's a big problem. Every day that goes by, we have 20 million Americans right now that are worried about whether they're going to be able to stay on their health care plans, will they continue to get health care from Obamacare. And you have this amount of dissension amongst Democrats and Republicans.
So if Republicans continue to differ among themselves about replacement, they'll need to get some Democrats on board to pass a plan. And Theron, will the Democratic base put up with that? Because repeal and replace and Tom Price are things they have pressured Democratic members of Congress to say no and hell no to.
Well, that's been the problem. I mean, because right now what you see is a huge amount of resistance from Democrats all the way down the line, particularly around what do we do with health care. So what the Republicans have got to do, Dennis, is that they've got to start reaching out across party lines now and figure out some type of compromise. But I tell you this, even when he becomes secretary, if Democrats are not at the table, and particularly these folks who represent many of these 20 million Americans are not at the table to come up with a compromise around the repeal and replace, we're going to see huge amount of resistance and dissension on both sides of the party come 2018.
You know, one thing that may be able to rally Republicans here and bring them together is the Democrats. If they are just obstructionists, if they don't come to the table to negotiate to fix the problems that we have with Obamacare, if they refuse to bring any votes to push this over the finish line, then we need to just completely wipe them out of the process and just do exactly what we want to do and ram it down their throats like they did ours in 2010, and just do it exactly the way we want to do it, pass it through the Senate on reconciliation so we don't have to deal with the 60-vote majority just like they did, and just get our pipe dream, our wish list, just pass it all.
So three-dimensional chess here.
Yes.
And finally, the campus carry fight is back at the state capitol. A new bill would again allow holders of concealed weapons permits to bring guns on campus. And it's a lot like the bill the governor vetoed last year, except the new version does say guns would still be banned in campus child care facilities. But some of the other exemptions the governor listed in last year's veto message aren't in there.
You know, Governor Deal wrote a handwritten note to House and Senate leaders in the last session to say what he would want to see in that bill in order to get his signature. And those changes weren't made. And I don't get the impression that the governor's viewpoints have changed on that, that the bill in its current form, in last year's form, would be vetoed again. This is a really tricky issue for the governor because unlike people who represent districts that are drawn for one party or the other, he represents all Georgians. And he has to deal with the reality that while a majority of Republican voters do support this legislation, a majority of Georgians don't. And so that's the hardest issues for an executive like Nathan Deal.
This is going to be a very tough position for the governor to be in. At a time when he started the session wanting to do something more about improving our education system in Georgia, at a time when he's faced with, you know, being open and to having a destination resort casino bill, constitutional amendment go forward. And what's so disheartening is that he's now got to deal with this, I think, distraction on carrying, you know, guns on college campuses.
Could this hijack the session?
I don't think it will, because one of the things that Republicans, I think, learned the last couple years is that you can't do too much at one time. I think what the governor's staff is going to do, and you're going to see Republicans come together and really try to get a version of this bill that the governor can live with. I personally am opposed to this bill in its current form, and I really don't think we need to allow college students to be able to carry guns on college campuses. However, you know, they fell last year. They've come back this year. But I thought it was really sort of, honestly, a little disrespectful to the governor to really put out a bill that didn't have any changes that he had suggested in his handwritten letter, as Brian pointed out. And so I think there's a long process, and let's just see how it goes in the next coming months.
Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist and former National Southern Regional Director for the Obama 2012 campaign. Brian Robinson is a former Deputy Chief of Staff to Governor Nathan Deal and Communications Director as well. Gentlemen, it's been fun. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks, Dennis.